This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Steve Ray. How are you, Steve?
Hi, Chris. Nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
Excellent, excellent. Last week we were talking about the three-tier model in the United States, which is sort of a mythical beast that's really been dominating the American wine scene and giving people possibly supernormal profits. This week we're going to talk more about the American wine scene, but I also want to tease out maybe what's going to happen to the three-tier model in the future.
We're talking about e-commerce, and there's a lot of misunderstanding about what is and what is not permissible. And in the U.S., it kind of defines things between interstate, meaning between states, selling someone in New York selling a bottle of wine to somebody in New Jersey. Or
is New Jersey part of New York?
They'd like to think so.
Well, then, I've got a mate who lives in New Jersey and he works in New York. I know they're right beside each other. They're different states.
Kind of sort of depends on how you talk. So where you're from kind of determines that. But in any case, all right, so let's use New York and Nevada, okay? So a retailer in New York a few years ago was able to sell to a consumer in Nevada. The law said you couldn't do it, but it was
nobody
enforced it. Now it's become a lot more enforced, and I won't go into the details of why that's the case. Suffice to say it is. There's only 14 states where that can happen. So a lot of retailers who built their business on e-commerce, and the guillotine came down on the e-commerce business 2 years ago, it'll be 3 years ago this November, basically disemboweled their entire business and where the bulk of their profits were coming. And so that's made some significant changes. One enforces driving towards the freedom of e-commerce, and the other one to retailers looking more towards private label because they can make more money on a private label than they can on a label that's ubiquitously available. So back to the e-commerce thing. So if within a state, a New York retailer can sell e-commerce to a New York State resident,
yep.
And there's 39 to 42 other states that's just the same. They can sell it to someone in their own state. So e-commerce is alive and well in New York, intrastate e-commerce.
State, yeah.
It's still huge. It's going to get huger. And interstate will happen because just recently the U.S. Supreme Court granted certiorari, which means that they're going to hear a case that's going to basically decide this. It's not exactly on this, but it's going to decide this. And if, in fact, they pass the law that we hope that they will, or make the ruling that they hope that they will, the entire thing is going to open up like whoop.
Okay. Does that, and that's retailers to consumer, though, isn't it? It's still not the distributors.
No, never to the distributors, but it doesn't matter. What happens is what we're going to be doing is dragging the U.S. beverage alcohol industry, kicking and screaming, into the 1960s.
I've heard people talking about the power of Amazon to really break down the walls because you mentioned these two big monopolistic companies that really hold the controls for the first tier, which is your is it supplier
and importer.
Supplier importer. What are the two companies again? The Great Southern or
the Southern called Southern Glazers and RNDC Breakthrough.
Yeah, yeah, and they've actually been trying using court. From what I you know this better than I do, but from what people have been talking around me, and I've been listening, is that they've been using those two big monopolies have been using the courts to try and stop competition.
Yes,
from
yes.
And they need someone big and ugly enough, and Amazon is probably.
They've done it. In fact, on that stage last year, I did a whole presentation on this, and it's a really interesting story. So Amazon, think about this. Amazon will, at the end of 2018, will have done 50% of all e-commerce in the United States. Of any kind of e-commerce, of any product sold from anybody to anybody, 50% of it is Amazon. 5% of the entire retail sales in the United States are going through Amazon. Amazon tried four iterations to get into the e-commerce business. That's what they specialize in, right? And failed four times in wine. I'm sorry. Yes. Yeah. And there's a long reason why they finally realized that here's the irony. The only way that the pioneer in the e-commerce world can get into the wine business is by buying – a chain of supermarkets that has physical stores in as many states as possible. So they bought Whole Foods.
Whole Foods, yeah.
And Whole Foods has stores in 44 states. Remember what I said about intrastate e-commerce? Yeah. Same thing happens to be in-store pickup and all the rest of that stuff. So in one fell swoop, Amazon became a significant player in 44 states immediately.
Okay.
And that's going to change everything. Now, I've said that's going to change everything a couple of times because that's what's happening. There are seismic changes happening in the U.S. market, and all of them are going to come together in a big earthquake.
And when do you think this is – you're saying this court case is the key pivotal moment?
One of.
Okay.
There's a lot of moving parts, and I think what's happening is – there's a confluence of a lot of these things being resolved in roughly a similar time period, which would be within the next 6 months. The Supreme Court, I think, session goes through June. So sometime between now and June, they will issue a ruling and we'll see what happens. Even if they don't do it in favor of wine e-commerce, what Amazon has done is sufficient. What Walmart is doing is sufficient. What Warren Buffett and Berkshire Hathaway, he's trying to get into the or is into the wine business through the distribution angle. Those are tremendous forces that nobody, not even the WSWA, Wine and Spirits Wholesalers of America, the big organization in the U.S., can stop. It's a juggernaut. And I think what we're seeing is, hey, I mean, this is economic forces coming to roost in an environment which has been highly regulated and is really no longer relevant to the world in which we live.
Okay. What sort of blood on the floors is going to be from that? Because
I hope not mine. That's my job, is to kind of not what's next, but what's next. Next.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I'm working on. But I'm sorry.
I mean, like when you have a massive flip in a market, there's going to be some big losers. There'll be big winners. I think we've identified it. It's going to be people at Amazon, Walmart, maybe Berkshire Hathaway. But what about the losers? Is it going to be the big suppliers?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I didn't even mention yet Total Wine. Right now, we do not have a national retailer of wine.
Oh, really?
Doesn't exist. You know, the U.S. is very different, okay? This company called Total Wine has been growing dramatically. They're now in probably 30 states with 500 stores. And as any big box store will do in any other category, whether it's electronics or shoes, they're going to redefine the marketplace there. Total Wine is redefining the retail marketplace in each of those states. So as case in point, I live in Connecticut. Total Wine came in. They put in five stores. And every other retail store in Connecticut is now in jeopardy of going out of business. The smart ones are going to figure out how to leverage e-commerce and all the rest of those things. Massachusetts, the same thing. 2 years ago, there were no Total Wine stores. Now there's five.
Okay.
And it's the little mom and pops who are going to disappear. And really, if you think about it, that's kind of what the internet is good at, right? The whole concept of long tail is that you have this infinite inventory of weird stuff that people can buy when they want to buy it. You're no longer limited to the inventory that's in one physical 2,000 square foot retail store.
Yep. Okay. So America's going to go through what probably Great Britain went through about 25 years ago when the supermarket, or 20 years ago when the supermarket started retailing wine.
I wasn't born yet, so I don't know. But yeah. Yes. Right. With Waitrose and all the others completely changing everything.
Wine used to be only available through independent wine merchants. When the supermarkets started selling wine, most of the retailers went to the wall. And it was really, really soul-destroying if you're in the wine trade, because all of a sudden, all this massive variety of wines that you used to be able to buy retail vanished. But what's happened with the internet, and also people are looking for things that are a little bit different to the big wines, you're starting in the UK now to see a burgeoning of retailers coming back into the wine scene. You know, you've got things like Majestic who have survived through it and actually grown up until recently. Well, I think that's more Brexit than anything else. But you're seeing more independent retailers starting to come back in.
Specialty retailers. We're seeing the exact same thing that people – well, if you think about it this way, you know, the craft beer industry has revolutionized the American beer industry, and the big brands are declining, have been for the last 8 years or so. And they've tried, it's called crafty, to come out with craft-like brands that are hidden. So if you look on a bottle of a brand like that in wine, okay, in wine, it would, if it says Modesto, California, it's made by Gallo. It may not have Gallo's name on it, but that's who does it. And it's similar in beer. Wine, by definition, is an agricultural product. It is, by nature, a craft. Even if you're producing in industrial quantities, somebody is a chemist in a lab making sure that it is consistent from year to year, because your goods, the actual materials that it's made from, changes every year. So it's not like mining iron ore and spitting out steel at the end of a plant. So I think what we're seeing is a lot of people embracing the inherent craftness of wine and saying, hey, this is cool. This is where I want to live. This is me. Because whether it's local, we now have wine production in every state in the country, 50 states. And no, I haven't tasted wine from Arizona yet, but I intend to. So I think, what we're seeing in England probably is a good look over the horizon for what's going to happen to America, in America, with the addition of e-commerce, which is going to overwhelm everything.
Right. And it's going to be a lot quicker because the independent market in the UK just died for 10 years. It really did. And it's only now that it's, maybe in the last 5 or 6 years, it's really started to come back a little bit.
Yeah, and people get used to buying, and I talk to people, and we've worked with clients who are big there and aren't making any money. They're doing huge volume in the supermarkets at like very little margin, and finally come to the point, what is the point? Let's go to China. We can do better there because we can make some more money. So I had mentioned earlier that I was going to tell a story, and this is one of my favorite ones. A buddy of mine used to work at one of the fanciest hotels in the U.S. called the Boca Raton Hotel and Country Club. This is 40 years ago when sommeliers weren't very common. So there was a sommelier in this restaurant. His name was Hans. He was like 8 feet tall, and he had the taste van and the whole thing. And Howard goes up to him and says, Hans, what's the best bottle of wine? And Hans said, the one I just sold.
Exactly.
And at the end of the day, we're in a business of selling wines, and everything that I'm trying to do is to go away from the preciousness of it and make it, it's wine. Do you enjoy it? That's it. You don't need a lecture to go with it. You just, do you like it or not? And if people like sweet wines, if they want to drink White Zinfandel, who am I to criticize them?
Although, I'll just get the last word in here.
You're the editor.
Luxury wines are all about bullshit, you know, and it's all about that whole mystique and all this sort of rubbish. And that's how you pump up the price and get people to pay super normal prices for a product. So it's true, but luxury wines, I think, because they've got the power and the income to justify that and the marketing spend to shift people's opinions. I agree with you, but I also think luxury wines will still have their place because they are the ones.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, but for different parts of the industry. And actually, this is kind of an interesting story. So I was meeting with an Italian producer at a restaurant called Del Posto in New York, which is arguably certainly the most expensive, if not the best Italian restaurant. Or it's got a reputation of same. You cannot buy Prosecco. They do not have it. When people want sparkling wine in Del Posto, because they're wealthy New Yorkers, they're buying champagne.
Okay.
Which I think there's a – I don't know what that means, but when he told me, no, we don't sell Prosecco, and he's one of the most well-known and most highly respected sommeliers in the world, that's because they're responding to consumer demand, and his customer base don't want Prosecco. Yet.
Yet. Hopefully they will. Yeah. All right, then. I think we're going to wrap it up there, Steve. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Cheers.